Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome once again to Connecting Faith. Looking forward to spending some time together with you today as we talk a little bit about church. Always an important topic and maybe how we do church, if you will. I'm Neil Stavem, by the way, a host of the program. Always glad to be along with you. Ted Ross at the controls. Carissa's there at the phones, and we will open up the phone lines here for the first part of the show as we spend a half hour or so talking with our guests today who have co-authored a new book called Slow Church, Cultivating Community in the Patient Way of Jesus. Now, we all know that church at the beginning, it was a lot of togetherness, right? The church ate together, traveled together, shared in all facets of life, and it seems like we've sort of moved away from that and become maybe almost too franchised, if you will. And so Chris Smith and John Patterson have written to help us review and consider another alternative. And out of that, they actually offer us a perspective on sort of ethical, ecological, and economical perspective on how we might cultivate community through slow church. We're going to have them define what we mean by slow church in a moment. Let me introduce them. Christopher Smith is editor of the Englewood Review of Books. He's a member of the Englewood Christian Church community on the urban Near East Side of Indianapolis. And he's been writing for Books and Culture and Sojourners, Christian Century, and others. He blogs at Slow Church. John Patterson is managing editor of Conspire magazine, and he previously served as deputy editor of the Burnside Writers Collective, and he's also co-authored the book Besides the Bible, 100 Books That Have, Should, or Will Create Christian Culture. And John is in, I think, Central Oregon, right? Or Western Oregon, is that right, John?
That's correct, yep. Yeah. About 45 miles southeast of Portland.
And Chris is in Indianapolis, and I'm just curious, did you guys know each other from sort of previous work experience or school or somewhere along the line? How did you connect?
Well, we met because we were both writing about books, actually.
Okay.
John did a stint as the books writer for Relevant magazine, mm-hmm. and I was the editor for Englewood at that point, and we were both writing for each other. So that's how we first got connected.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about, by way of definition, slow church. You talk about slow food and fast food, and maybe some people aren't really aware of that whole movement as well.
Yeah, that's right. Slow Church is inspired by the slow food movement, which started in 1989, as you were saying, sort of as a reaction against fast food and all forms of fast life. And slow food as a movement really took off. It has, I think, 100,000 members worldwide now and has spawned a number of other slow movements. And we think that there's a lot that the church can glean from trying to understand what has made those various slow movements so compelling for people, about finding a way of being together that is more holistic, less industrialized or McDonaldized, and really values people and the neighborhood over things like efficiency and predictability, calculability and control. Which are some of the hallmarks of McDonaldization, as one sociologist termed it.
Well, let's pick up on that. Maybe talk about those things, efficiency and predictability and control. Are those things that shouldn't be part of a church function or structure?
Not necessarily, Neil. I think that the problem is that we've come to rely on them too much and that those have kind of become the metrics of how we measure our faithfulness rather than simply faithfulness to
to the way of Jesus, the life and teaching of Jesus. And I think that's where we start to run into problems when we basically those sorts of things, efficiency, calculability, predictability, become shortcuts where we don't have to do the hard work of denying ourselves, taking up our cross and following Jesus, basically. And then that's what we're kind of trying to call into question in the course of the book.
So is it, does this tend to be, I mean, we get sort of those behaviors, efficiency and predictability, some of the things when we get, what, heavily programmed? Is that part of it, or is it just maybe a different kind of program focus? And Chris, maybe I'll start with you, and then John, you can jump in.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, I'm not categorically opposed to programs. I mean, I think programs can be helpful, but when we rely on programs instead of being attentive, I mean, oftentimes churches will use programs that were developed elsewhere, and they just won't really be a good fit for their congregation. John has a story that he might want to share about that, that he tells about in the book.
Yeah, so even before I had ever heard of the slow food movement, back in the mid to late 90s, I was attending a big church in Lincoln, Nebraska, and we had a big college group there. And every year, the college pastors would travel to Willow Creek Church, and then for these conferences, and they would come back with stacks of binders of programs that they wanted to implement in Lincoln. And I was, as I said, like, you know, pretty young. I was 18, 19 years old. But there was something about that didn't sit right with me. It just didn't feel indigenous to try to apply these programs without any sort of deference to the local context. And there's a well-known Bible teacher named Warren Wiersbe who went to our church. And we were talking once at a banquet, and he asked how things were going in the college group, and I just sort of expressed some of my frustrations, and he said something that planted an early seed of Slow Church. He said, just remember that you can't franchise the blessings of God. And I think that happens a lot, that we try to franchise what's working elsewhere in our own context, and we're almost always doing it for good reasons, but I think faithful life in the church is often much slower than that allows for, than that sort of franchise work allows for.
Does the slow church sort of the ideas that you're recommending, does it become like maybe an alternative franchise, if you will, or this is a sort of a different set of programs, or it obviously is an alternative, but talk about its distinctive, I guess. What is Slow Church compared to that sort of franchise look?
Well, Neil, one of the things, probably the main practice that we really want to encourage and promote as part of the Slow Church process is the practice of conversation. And what's unique about conversation is, first of all, that it's not primarily about getting things done. I mean, certainly things get done as a result of conversation, but the nature of conversation is to really be attentive to what God has provided us, both in our church congregations and in our neighborhoods, and to really get to know the people that God has provided to us, that God has surrounded us with, And that's, I mean, that's not programmatic. That's going to look different in different places. It's also pretty countercultural. We learn fairly quickly in Western culture in this age not to talk to one another very well. I mean, we see this embodied in the politics of today, that there's a deep divide between the parties, and they're not able to talk very well together and to work together. And I think I think our churches can be a place where we start to recover the capacity to talk together and to actually work together meaningfully.
And if I could just hop in here as well, we're often asked after a SOW Church event, people are resonating with ideas and they say, you know, okay, so what should we do next? And we caution them a little bit. First of all, like, we don't know enough about their neighborhood or their church to be able to really answer that question well. But we also recognize that there is a temptation for SOW Church to become, as you were saying, Neil, sort of yet another program. And so our practice lately has been to encourage people to look at what they're already doing in their church. Like, for example, is your church singing and praying and studying scripture together in order to be productive, in order to get something done? Or is it about just being faithfully present with each other and with God in your place? And how, you know, what are some of the other practices that your church is already doing that are maybe oriented more toward efficiency or productivity or speed? And how can those be reoriented toward faithful presence in your place, in your community? Rather than adding something new, pivoting those things that you're already doing toward faithful presence.
I suppose it's easy to sort of let the pendulum swing sort of too far one way or the other, because I know you talk about, you know, patience and sort of, you know, but the idea of that kind of getting things done sort of appeals to me. So, I mean, is it, you know, how do we sort of establish faithfulness and patience and rest without sort of maybe just a live and let live approach, or, you know, that I'm just curious if you find that the pendulum tends to swing a lot. And John, I don't know, maybe you react and then Chris, you can jump in.
I mean, I think so. I think that that's a natural tendency for it to swing too far to the other side. I actually think that that's one of the, as Chris was saying earlier, that's one of the, that's one of the important, one of the reasons why conversation is such an important practice, because conversation does slow us down, and it's like we are being formed more into a like a body of believers in our place through that sort of slow conversation. And so I don't feel like I'm doing a very good job of articulating this, but I think that there are plenty of things that need to be done, but if there's not sort of the conversation and group discernment involved, then I think a lot of the things that we do despite our best intentions are less likely to be sustainable or even truly effective, because I really don't have the buy-in of the whole body, and they may not even be totally appropriate for the neighborhood that you're in.
Yeah, if I could just add a couple more thoughts on that too. I mean, I think that, I mean, part of what I absolutely agree with John, that conversation is the way that we kind of mediate that from swinging too far in one way or the other. But there also, just to add to that, that there are certain things that are urgent. Somebody in our congregation is going to lose their heat, or a neighbor doesn't have food or something. I mean, those are situations that actually do require some urgency of us. And to talk about SOW Church isn't always necessarily just to move as slowly as possible for its own sake. But what, as John was kind of alluding to, I think part of what we're trying to encourage people to do is to be attentive not only to what we believe God is doing, but attentive to how we are being called to do that. And it's interesting, as Eugene Peterson has pointed out, that Jesus refers to himself as the way, and that's not a just kind of a throwaway sort of comment, but it's very important that that our following Jesus isn't about doing what we think Jesus should do and in whatever way we please, but actually being attentive to how Jesus did things, and trying to shape our life together around that. And that's where conversation happens.
Chris Smith and John Patterson are my guests today. They've co-authored a new book called SOW Church, Cultivating Community in the Patient Way of Jesus. And we've got another 10 minutes or so with John and Chris. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have some time to take your call at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. We do have a copy of the book that we'll give away as well. If you're interested in pursuing this more, and that's something that you're hearing just kind of captivates you and you want to learn more. We'll talk a little bit about things like stability and patience and gratitude and hospitality. It's part of a theological vision for Slow Church. We'll get more with John and Chris in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Talking today about Slow Church, a theological vision for Slow Church, moving away from the franchise faith and entering into a new order of things where we cultivate community in the patient way of Jesus. And helping us do that, Christopher Smith and John Patterson, they've co-authored the new book, Slow Church, and it's from InterVarsity Press. And you talk about sort of three courses, and maybe just mention those three courses and summarize a bit, if you would. And Chris, we'll start with you on that.
Yeah, so the three courses that we talk about, they're basically drawn from the slow food movement. The three kind of cardinal virtues of the slow food movement is a preference for food that is good, clean, and fair. And we thought that we would kind of reinterpret those terms into language that was a little bit more familiar in the Christian tradition. So we kind of stumbled upon ethics, ecology, and economy. And maybe John can explain what each of those means.
Yeah, that'd be great. So ethics, ecology, and economy, is the structure of the book. And by ethics, what we mean is what we mean by ethics is having as our ultimate standard in the church faithfulness as faithfulness to the way of Jesus. And then ecology talks about and realizing that everything that we do and are as a church sort of falls within God's mission of the reconciliation of all things. And then the economy is God's abundant provision for that work of reconciliation. And then we end the book with a chapter that we've sort of alluded to a couple of times, which is we call church as dinner table conversation. And it's when we believe that eating together, the practices of eating together and talking together, take some of the abstract concepts that we've talked about elsewhere in the book and brings them, it brings them onto the ground as we make some of the day-to-day practical decisions of how we live and eat and talk with each other.
I noticed that in several of the aspects of the book is centered around shared meals and hospitality. Maybe just say why that's so important, or that value that maybe we've lost in our kind of industrialized churches.
Sure, I can take that. Part of what we talk about in the economy, the section of the book, is the way that God provides abundantly for the life and flourishing of creation. And what we suggest is if God provides abundantly for us, then we should also share generously with others. But we come to hospitality particularly because it seems like it's an intimate form of generosity. It's not just kind of giving people money at an arm's length and sending them on their way, but rather it's opening our church buildings, our homes, our lives to others, and to sharing with them in that very personal sort of way.
And let's, John and Chris, let's take a call. Patty is listening in on Faith 90.5 in the Duluth area with a question about kind of making a connection. Patty, go ahead. You're on with Chris and John.
Hello. I'm calling. I've been attending a church for probably 12 years and have made no connections there, although I've gone to the groups and the Wednesday things and the Sundays. And it just it's a smaller town, but church is probably 300 people at times or even more. But I don't seem to be able to make any connections there, although I'm, you know, doing all the things that I think I can to outreach. There's no personal stuff as far as I've never been invited to dinner or lunch or anything like that. Seems like out here people have their longtime family and their longtime school friends, and that's, they go Sunday to Sunday and then go home to those people, you know. And so I'm just wondering what else I can do besides attending all these groups where I feel left out and lonely, and just wondering what I can do, I guess.
Yeah, Patty, thank you for the call. I think that there's probably many people that are kind of wondering about that, too. How does this Slow Church help us connect, John and Chris? What would you say? John, just go ahead and jump in and start with you.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Patty, thanks so much for the call and for talking about your situation there. I think that what you described is not at all uncommon. I think that what Slow Church can help, the way Slow Church can help here is by putting the focus more on the people and less on the programs. I would also say that it would be great if you could find more people in your neighborhood that you can connect with. I mean, we actually talk, while the book is called Slow Church, we actually say that a lot of Slow Church actually happens outside the walls of a sanctuary. And so if you can connect with other followers of Jesus in your neighborhood that you're going to be interacting with on a regular basis, that you can have meals with in your home, I think that's one thing that could be helpful. And then churches need to encourage that sort of life of faith outside of the sanctuary, outside of the four walls of the sanctuary.
Cultivating community in the full sense. Chris, we only have a couple minutes left. I don't know if you want to just respond and then maybe some closing comments.
Yeah, I mean, I would just second what John said, that, I mean, this isn't all that uncommon. And that to it's helpful whether you do it outside the church, as John was kind of talking about, or even inside the church, of finding ways to be engaged, be connected with the people in the church congregation, whether that's inviting somebody out for coffee or whatever. I mean, I think that we definitely agree that a lot of this kind of happens outside of a lot of the programs of the church.
We're our time is get away from us. We just had a short time to kind of review this new book from John Patterson and Christopher Smith. It's called Slow Church, Cultivating Community in the Patient Way of Jesus. And it's from InterVarsity Press. We do have a copy that we'll give away. If you want to give us a call, sign up for that. It's 877-93-FAITH. John and Chris, thank you for the work you've done on this, and I'm sure that we're going to be hearing a lot more about this in the days and weeks to come.
Great. Thank you, Neil.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Coming up here in the next half hour, you want to stay tuned. We're going to spend some time with Jim Rogers, who calls himself an architectural pastor. We're going to talk particularly, what do you do when a congregation is facing maybe closing the doors? Do they sell? Do they merge? What do they do? And, of course, every situation is different. But Jim has done some great work on this and has written an article coming up in Leadership Journal to talk about it. And we're going to hear his story coming up after this break on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. As we've been talking about church, we want to focus on the church properties, particularly over the next few minutes. And to talk about what happens when a church maybe is losing membership and is facing the possibility of closing its doors. What happens then? Our guest has worked with a number of churches in the area of church facility ministry. In fact, that's the company that he works with. He's also part of a consultant group called Church Building Consultants, and he does some pastoral work, interim pastoral work as well. Jim Rogers is an architectural pastor. He actually has a background as an architect and has used that to help and write on the areas of improving church health through facility stewardship. And in the moments ahead, we'll find out more about that. Jim Rogers has written for Leadership Journal and Discipleship Journal and many other areas as well, and has done some pastoring and recently experienced a change for a church in Zion, Illinois. We want to hear about that next. So, Jim, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks, Neil. Good to be with you.
By way of background, I guess it was a couple months ago, I talked to Tom Rainer, and he's written a new book about the autopsy of a deceased church, and it just sort of prompted a discussion about, you know, there, from what I've heard, there probably are a number of churches around the nation that maybe have just two or three people in them, or maybe are vacant, and that's a lot of property, a lot of investment that perhaps could be used in ministry in some other ways. So, Jim, maybe just let me start with that. Is this a common scenario, and how have you gotten involved in some of these areas?
Well, I believe it is a common scenario, and unfortunately, I think it's going to be one that's going to continue to accelerate in terms of what churches are experiencing across the country. And we almost hesitate to use the word church is dying. At the end of the day, Jesus conquered death, and we all believe that, right?
Right.
So what we do when we approach some of these particular scenarios is to think about it not as much of a church dying, but what is it that God is doing from a kingdom perspective? Because local churches may come and go. Jesus said, "I will build my church." Right, Matthew 16. But that wasn't a specific promise to specific local churches. It's interesting, in the New Testament, many of the letters that are written to various cities, and as well the letters of Revelation from Jesus in Revelation 2 and 3, a lot of those cities don't have a very prominent Christian witness today. So the point would be, it is possible for churches to wane. It is possible for them to die down in numbers so that they are faced with some difficult decisions as they try and, as I say, think kingdomly about what God's doing for the future. And I want to emphasize, it's different for every single church. I've recently had a very hands-on experience with a church, Zion Bible Church in Zion, Illinois, and they were faced with some real difficult decisions, and it's a scenario in which God placed me, I think, because of how He prepared me in the past for what I'm doing now, at least in leading Zion Bible through what we did and where we're going for the future. And also that background prepared me for a lot of the different experiences I have with all kinds of different churches. Every scenario is different. And for Zion Bible, the merger dynamic was the right fit for them, and I can share more about that. But for other churches, it's not going to be a merger scenario. I'm working with another church just started where they've got problems with their facilities, and they've just engaged our services, or are engaging, to help them figure out how do we bring this building up to a little bit better standard. Now, this is a church that's grown older over the years, and they're dealing with a lot of the dynamics you're talking about. And they say, hey, if we're not careful, we're going to eventually just physically die off. But there, they have a pastor that's committed to the long term. They want to take another shot. They're trying to say, let's not give up on that yet. So what we're doing there is helping to improve their facility with the limited funds that they have. It'll enable them to just be more effective, and it gives them some more time to evaluate these kinds of very difficult and very emotional decisions. So all that to say, for every church, it's going to be a different dynamic. Maybe it's going to be a merger. Maybe it's going to be a try and do something new with your facility. Oftentimes that's the issue, just because facilities go into disrepair. Or then, as you kind of referenced, maybe it's just kind of closing the doors. But if you do that, there's a number of different caveats I'd want to add to that as well.
Sure. Well, and we'll talk more about that as we go on. I want to hear your story, kind of example of what happened at Zion Bible Church in Zion, Illinois. But I'm curious to know if, in terms of facilities and churches that are facing some, you know, hard questions about, do we keep the doors open? Do we, you know, what happens? Is this more of a rural issue? Is it urban? I mean, is it just for small churches, or, I mean, can big churches be affected as well?
Well, I think it's rural and it's urban, because we see churches in both contexts. And you might think, well, this is just a small church issue. But it's not just a small church issue, because I got one church that I dealt with, 6 or 7 years ago, that was a thriving community, over 400 people. And then they had a perfect storm of problem dynamics that went through the church. They ended up down to about 50 to 70 people, and even less than that. By the time they got that small, then suddenly it was the mortgage on a building that was a wonderful facility. They could no longer maintain that with that small of a group. So it can impact almost anyone if you're not careful in casting the vision for who we are, how are we accomplishing our piece of the Great Commission.
We want to be effective, no matter what the size, I guess, or situation in our church, to be advancing God's kingdom. So, Jim, tell us a little bit about your story. You became an interim pastor at Zion Bible Church, and it was, as I understand, a small, struggling church, and there are many like it. So are there some principles we can draw out of there? Talk about what you did there.
Sure, sure. Well, as you mentioned, I'm an architectural pastor, and I could sense you're almost having a challenge trying to describe that. I don't blame you. I've got this background in architecture. That was my undergraduate degree, and I practiced that for 4 years. And then the next 19 years, I was involved as a local church pastor. Then 7 years ago, through a long series of events, God led me to this place of an architectural pastor and getting aligned with providers for facility services. And my goal as an architectural pastor is to improve church health through facility stewardship. Now, sometimes people will throw out that term of facility stewardship, but I have a specialized definition for that. That's about being driven by biblical foundation, identify facility issues that impact ministry. See, if a facility issue does not impact ministry, we've got flexibility. If it does impact ministry, then we need to start a grid of decision-making. What do we do? Okay. And then the third part of the definition is to implement solutions with leadership skills that will improve overall church health. And that's what drives me at the end of the day, is to make churches healthier. So, in this role as an architectural pastor, I had not been actively pastoring a specific local church, but I do a lot of pulpit supply, guest speaking, and that's how it started at Zion Bible Church. And my whole family loved the church. Small church of about 50 people in the community of Zion, Illinois, which is a very unique community, by the way, originally started as kind of this utopian vision of a city. But we loved the church, and we wanted to help them as best they could, but they were facing some serious challenges. A year and a half earlier, their faithful pastor of 36 years retired, and then their search for a new pastor was this path of discouragement and frustration. In addition, the facility needed major repairs and upgrades. It was one of these things that the people kind of adopted the old Morton Salt phrase, when it rains, it pours. And inside the building, there were places where it poured. So they faced challenges there. They couldn't bring a new pastor on for a variety of reasons, and so they were trying to figure out what God would have them do next. It was at that time that the adjacent hospital offered them about double the appraised value for their property. Now, they had been kind of putting the hospital off for about 10 years. They'd come to them a number of different times, and they said, no, 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 no. And it was in this last juncture when they said, you know, we don't have a pastor. We can't figure out what to do with our building. They had accessibility issues, so you didn't have a restroom that was easy to get to, and a lot of asbestos in the building, so it was going to be very costly just to start any project and have some of that removed. So there were many challenges, and they made the decision with that kind of money, they believed that God would have them go ahead and sell the building. And it was at that time, as I was doing this pulpit supply, they then went, they hired our services to help them find a new church home. Early on, in trying to decide the right things to do for a building, we tried to identify a church's DNA. What's their culture? You see, the facility of a church needs to match that culture. And so they kind of liked what I was doing there and casting some vision ideas for them. And so they said, tell you what, Jim, if you won't be our senior pastor full-time, will you be our interim? So I accepted the call to be their interim pastor. But I have to admit, it was a challenging time because we had just over a year until we had to give the building up to the hospital. So what were we going to do? And we considered so many scenarios, but what I want to emphasize in this story is how God was at work. And it was for us truly an amazing adventure. There was a good amount of money, but what could we do with that? And what was the long-term pastoral situation going to be? But while I didn't know what we were going to do, Neil, I don't know if I've ever felt a stronger sense of conviction of God's leading. And I'm not trying to be overly mystical with this, but it was a very unusual internal dynamic that I've experienced. So what I did was I just started to share that with the congregation. And I openly shared. I said, you know what? I don't know where we're going. But this is what I know. God is leading. And I called us to embrace this amazing adventure, or the great adventure is what we called this chapter. I borrowed that title from a Stephen Curtis Chapman song.
Sure.
And
you're dating yourself, but that's okay.
I was reminded that by my children a little bit. But, yeah, it's a fun song that has some lyrics that include going out into the glorious unknown. So we kind of grasped that a little bit, that the unknown, yeah, we don't like it, but it's glorious. Why? Because God is leading us. So we identified two basic scenarios. First one was to build or renovate and build something new or renovate an existing building on our own. And through my network and team at CBC and others, we could have done something there. We investigated scores of different properties and potential costs, and nothing really seemed to rise to the top because everything we looked at seemed to have some challenges. The other scenario was merging with another church or churches. And we had half a dozen or so different churches' approaches about possibly merging. And again, each of those scenarios presented some challenges. And that's when our board was really wise, and they were just kind of saying, hey, are they interested in us as a people, or are they interested in the money that came from the sale of the building? It's something you have to honestly ask in evaluating these things. And when churches are going through these decision-making grids, as your listeners maybe are in one of those churches, face those questions. Talk about those kind of questions openly with other churches that you might be speaking with. At the end of the day, the dollars do impact the way that people are thinking sometimes. So So those were our two basic scenarios. And it's interesting, after I accepted the call to go there in the spring of 2013, I was all set to go. I've got this message series ready to go called The Great Adventure. We were going to look at Paul's second missionary journey through Acts 15 to 18. It was going to get us pumped up and ready to go. And it's almost like God kind of said, not yet, Jim. And I believe that God wanted us to slow down and commune with God for a season. We had a ticking clock, but if churches are really going to experience God's plans for them, I think they've got to take pauses along the way. It's interesting, after our concluding service, among the things that the people shared was how much they appreciated that time to slow down and commune with God. So behind the scenes, the board kept working, but we did a summer series in the book of Psalms and just relished what God was doing in our lives. I got to give my wife credit. She came up with the phrase, calling it the little church that could. Are you familiar with the old story of the little engine that could?
Sure.
Yeah. And I think it's that kind of mentality that's very important to keep in mind. As long as you're moving forward in the plans and the workings and the relationship with God, that's where we want to get to, isn't it? It's about the process and how we're getting there.
Jim, let me jump in, and we want to take a quick break to keep on schedule, but then want to come back and pick up the story as we go along. Talking with Jim Rogers, he's an architectural pastor, works with Church Facility Ministry. And we're hearing about, you know, how we care for the facilities that we have. And there's many, I'm sure, that are listening, just listening to your story, that know of or maybe are in a small church that's got some challenges before it and what to do. We're going to hear about what Zion Bible Church decided to do and maybe some principles that we can draw from that. And we'll do that in just a minute as we continue here on Connecting Faith. Listening to Connecting Faith. We've connected today with Jim Rogers, who is an architectural pastor, and that means that he works with the church facility ministry or in ministries and helping to be good stewards of the facilities that we have. And as you've been listening, he's been telling a bit about his story as an interim pastor at Zion Bible Church in Zion, Illinois. Small congregation, had some really serious facility needs, so they're thinking about building or renovating or merging. Those are kind of the questions there. I had an opportunity to sell the property. So, Jim, maybe just kind of pick up the story from there and maybe some of the principles that you can draw for us from that.
Sure. Well, I was calling it the little church that could, the phrase that my wife used after the children's story about the little engine that could. It's interesting. At our concluding service, I shared about that it became the little church that did. And a lot of the people just needed to recapture the sense that God is doing something here. In these small churches where they're wondering what's happening next, it just so much becomes kind of business as usual. And after a while, that just becomes discouraging. And the biggest things you experience as a fellowship maybe are the funerals. And when you're only having funerals, that doesn't create a lot of excitement. So it became the little church that did, as God allowed us to cast this vision for what it was that he was doing. One of the phrases that I used along the way was to remind the people that the building we were in was not what it was all about in the end. The building is only a tool. And while I'm involved in facility ministry areas, one of the things that I constantly emphasize is buildings are not ministry. People are ministry. And so as folks kept that in mind, that gave them a good perspective about the building that they were leaving. Now, eventually, we came to that last service. which happened this past May. And instead of just calling it a last service or something like that, it was great. One of our board members came up with the phrase, let's call it a building retirement. At retirements, you celebrate, right? You remember the accomplishments. And so that's what we did. At that final service, with some of the proceeds from the hospital, which, you know, never goes as far as you'd like to, the board put together a plan for some legacy gifts. For more than 80 years, Zion Bible Church actively involved in missions around the world. So the congregation unanimously approved legacy gifts for about a dozen different ministries intended to make a significant impact. One of the legacy gifts was for a church planter in Ireland who, showing you how God was at work here, he had just received approval for a building purchase for their church in Ireland, but they had all kinds of improvements they needed before they could actually start. And so when we gave him the gift at the concluding service there, our building retirement service, he shared, I had a 5-year plan to implement, but this gift immediately completes the 5-year plan. And he said, it's not like you're closing a building here. You're just replacing it with another building in Ireland. So another case was a Youth for Christ missionary who needed funds to get his ministry launched there at the local high school. And he had just been declined funding from a Christian foundation. When it was the next morning, we invited him to our building retirement service. And it was very moving. At our reception afterwards, with tears in his eyes, he just shared that the legacy gift we gave doubled the amount he requested from the foundation. So I'm sure you and other listeners can understand, those are things that we can't put in place. And I was just reminded of this simple phrase, God is never late, but he is seldom early. So we had the opportunity to give a number of legacy gifts. The final legacy gift we gave to Northbridge Church, the church that we ended up merging with, and that could be its own story in and of itself, but how we chose them because of the right DNA fit, the right doctrine, the right DNA, and it was a good culture for our people, and we were able to give a gift to them that will make a substantial impact for their building plans, interestingly enough, and again, this is how God seemed to be orchestrating all these events, and that's how the little church that could became the little church that did.
Jim, and our time has gotten away from us already, and we want to maybe have you back and talk more at some point, but I know you're writing on a blog about this, right, regularly, or at least some ways to improve church health.
Yeah.
Talk about how people can get a hold of you or find out
sure,
more.
Sure. Well, I appreciate that. You can get in touch with me at facilityministry.org, all one word, facilityministry.org. And I try and blog about facility issues that impact ministry and how to improve church health through facility-related issues. And I've got a lot of plans for it. I'm trying to start picking up my blogging pace on that, and the website is in some current renovation. But invite people to contact me there. Also, I've got, I think you've made reference to a Leadership Journal article, one of the publications of Christianity Today, Leadership Journal. I tell about this story, Zion Bible, and some other principles about church merging in an upcoming article that's due out in mid-October. So folks can find some more information there.
Want to look for that. Always insightful to be reading Leadership Journal, and this would be particularly helpful if you're in a church that maybe has some facility issues, or maybe there's, you know, a number of factors, and you're wondering, you know, do we close the doors? Do we try and remodel, build? Is there a merger involved? What does that look like? We'll be able to help you with some of those questions if you maybe read the article, upcoming Leadership Journal, or go to facilityministry.org, and you can make some connection with Jim Rogers, who is an architectural pastor and currently serving in the area of church building consultants out of the suburban Chicago area.
Well, and now I'm actually part of that Northbridge church team because that pastoral role shifted, and Like you said, the story is continuing. It's pretty interesting.
So Jim's doing some pastoral team work at Northbridge Church, and you can read more about the story in the upcoming Leadership Journal article. But we wanted to just check with him today because it seemed like this is an important topic that affects a lot of churches around our nation, not only small ones or rural ones, but urban and big ones as well. So, Jim, thank you for just kind of maybe whetting our appetite today and at least telling us your story. Appreciate it so much.
Oh, thank you, Neil. I appreciate it. It's an honor to share with you today.
Well, you've been listening to Connecting Faith and talking with Jim Rogers these past few minutes. Again, to find out more about his work on the website facilityministry.org. And if you missed part of our program, including our earlier discussion on Slow Church, you can always listen to the podcast online. Go to myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith for the podcast archives. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for listening to Connecting Faith.